Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. It is this Monday, the 23rd of June, 2025. We're into the second hour of the programme. Thank you so much for getting our phone lines and text lines so busy. And it's on a various topics as well. Greg mentioned some of the flaws of the driving test, such as driving in the dark or in icy conditions. A programme was done on Top Gear about the process to drive in Finland. They must complete 3 years of training before they can take a test. This is why they are such good drivers. Their basic training is our advanced driver training. Maybe somewhere in between where we're at and there as well. And also, too, not necessarily out of our own pockets, you know. We'd pay a lot of tax. Maybe the government could help with some of that stuff. Staying on the roads, the grass should have been cut on the dual carriageway this year for the rally. The entrances of the town should have been looking presentable and looking well. The council should have done better. I didn't see where you're talking of, but what I did note is that on some of the stages of the rally, people themselves were, and they probably do it in the summer anyway, but, you know, cutting grass out, painting fences, and I actually think our county looked wonderful. As I say, I wasn't in Letterkenny, I didn't see much of it, but what I have seen and what I've seen with my own eyes, it just looked like an amazing part of the world, which indeed it is. He says nothing is perfect, therefore an 85 test pass should be introduced, which would allow a reduction on the waiting list. Many are failed for minor mistakes, which should be failed, advisable on the test. Now, I haven't done my test for quite some time, so I don't know. Maybe if you've sat your test, and this caller has one view, and I'm not in any way disregarding it, but do you believe that the test is too rigid? Are maybe minor mistakes counted as majors? Let us know. A family member had to book and pay six times for their test. The instructor on one occasion wouldn't do the test as he said there was a stain on the seat. And on another occasion, the tester cancelled the test day before he was sick. The RSA is not fit for purpose and now trying to deflect with blaming on cancellations. Well, that is exactly why I wanted to talk about that. That was my first question because it got my back up a little bit when we spoke to the former head of the RSA who suggested that, you know, it's all down to us not turning up for tests, and that's nonsense. There could be a little bit of flexibility as well. Now, the statistics that I was referencing just before 10, they are specifically people who didn't turn up. So your tester who didn't like the stain on the seat or what have you, that wouldn't be included in those statistics. But I've heard lots of stories similar to what you've just said there. A huge thanks to the Gardaí for their work during the rally, says a listener. Their zero tolerance seems to have paid off very well. It is the first Saturday night ever during a rally that we weren't kept awake all night by road noise. Over the rally weekend, the minute excessive road noise started. Sorry, let me start that again. Over the rally weekend, the minute excessive road noise started, it took a short time for it to stop, meaning the Gardaí were obviously on it straight away. Again, a huge thanks to them. Now, I'm not sure if it is because the Garda operation had wound up, but I did hear some reports that things got quite noisy in certain areas last night. And I do know as well there are people in the Milford sort of district area who didn't get any sleep at all on Saturday night. So different areas are gonna feel different things. Who with more than two brain cells to rub together has ever claimed good leadership regarding Trump? The man's bankrupted casinos, those print money. He's the definitional moron who managed to ride a culture clash to power. Well, 50% of Americans went out and thought, you know what, you did so well in your first term, we're giving you another go. So probably those people. Israel will never allow Iran to get nuclear weapons. The supporters of Islamic terrorists in Donegal will be very disappointed. Greg, the tide seems to be turning against Trump in the United States now. Well, maybe it's only on my YouTube. That's the worst thing about watching a YouTube video. You get overrun with videos. These people with their own YouTube channel, and I don't know who any of them are and what, if any, journalistic credibility or qualifications they have. They all seem to be anti-Trump. But I'm very wary of anything I watch nowadays. I wonder, though, what the people in America are seeing on YouTube and if it's the same. Well, it's algorithms. So if you watch a video of on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, if you watch a couple of videos of anti-Trump rallies, that's what you're going to be given. So you could very easily start thinking that the only thing that's happening in America is anti-Trump. Conservatism... liberalism has been monetized now, so those YouTube channels, they create content for the people that like what they're making to make money. So it's not impartial, and I don't think anyone pretends that it is. But the algorithms are such that you will keep getting videos of stuff that you like watching. And if you are anti-Trump, you're going to keep getting watched. You keep going to get anti-Trump videos. But you talk about journalistic integrity, if they've got any. Again, let me point to the fact that of all the coverage I'm seeing in the Western media of what's happening in the Middle East, it seems to be very pro-Israel, pro-America, the job's done, bullseye, all that kind of stuff. And they're not really platforming as well as I think they should, just so that we get a balanced view on it. What the Russians are saying, what the Iranians are saying, you might not like them, but it'd be very interesting, given the global consequences, that we kind of get a sense of what they believe happened, how impactful it was on their nuclear program, etc. Morning, Greg. Our government are doing the same as Trump by getting rid of our triple lock without letting the people have a referendum. They have the numbers to push ahead. Thank you. It's a big shout to do without consulting the public, no doubt. Another caller says, it's very simple, Greg. The Jewish people, rule the US, and they are the ones taking advantage of the US and not Europe, as Trump believes the US elected a lunatic to run the country, and this is the result. Let me see. I'll come back to that one in a second. We need to look into the Gaza 1 and Gaza 2 gas wells. This is what's causing the war in Gaza. It's all about oil. They reckon there's enough gas in the wells to power Gaza 17 times over. This would make the Palestinians rich, and that's what it's all about. But Israel's an incredibly rich country, and America has tons of its own gas and oil, thanks to Trump policy. So I'm not sure if that's as big a motivator as it once was, perhaps. No American boots on the ground. Russians are full of bluster. They will not intervene. You want both sides of the story, but not when it comes to Ireland's open borders policy. They've obviously got issues with mass immigration, and have actually managed to get it in there, in their view of what's happening in the Middle East, which is quite remarkable. I'm not... We discuss this stuff all the time in the programme. And there was a massive march down in Dublin. There was a couple of marches down in Dublin. There's one in Cork too on housing over the weekend as well. Wonder where they're all refuelling aeroplanes, Greg. Well, some of them refuel in the sky. I wonder, are you suggesting some of these planes can fly great distances without refuelling? I know there is refuelling in Shannon, but the ones that flew over North Donegal, I believe they went direct to somewhere in Europe. Come on, Greg. Trying to defend anything Israel does is not ethical at the minute. Iran's stance on LGBT rights is not the focus at the minute. Palestine and Iran has the right to self-determination and resistance. My point is this. I don't understand how you think I'm defending anything Israel has done, but I respect your view if that's the impression I gave. I'm just saying that I find it interesting that there are a lot of people, okay, on the left, let me put it to you like that, that are very much coming out to bat for Iran, but they wouldn't last 5 minutes in Iran because of the way that country is run. I think that's a fair enough observation, isn't it? A caller says, I spent 75% of my life in London. There was a high Jewish population. They were great neighbours and people. You could walk around the area and live in peace. I always found them to be very nice. They wouldn't want to argue with you or be violent. Back in Ireland, I found the Irish to be more aggressive. I can't understand what's happening in Israel. Sorry, yeah, they say. The facts are that Barack Obama, Bush and Joe Biden issued 10 times more attacks on various Middle East countries, killing innocent people in their thousands. They were wrong also. Yeah, when Trump does it, he is dangerous and unbalanced, but the others are considered sane and saintly. Wow, okay. Weapons of mass destruction. America being dragged into a multi-year war on false information. The negative impact that's had on Bush and Blair and the rest. I don't think they're held in high regard by anyone, to be honest with you, unless you agreed with what they did. But this caller says, Genocide, Joe, is a lot to answer for Palestine. We won't hear that. It's not so simple as Trump, bad, all others good. I detest violence, whether it's Trump or Obama. All violence should be called out. It's wrong. Well, listen, calling out Trump's policy is not necessarily anti-Trump, and then, you know, it's Genocide Joe versus Trump. The only thing is you can trust people on their record. Trump came in saying he'd be a clean brush. He said he'd end the war in Russia, between Russia and Ukraine. That hasn't happened. He says he would sort out the Middle East. It hasn't happened. In fact, things have got progressively worse since Trump was in power. Inflation is still very high in America. The cost of living is still very high. You're only judging people equally on their record. I'm not anti-Trump. I'm not pro-Trump. Unless it actually affects me, I don't really care who runs America. All I'm saying is that he's 4 or 5 or 6 months deep into his administration, and everything that he's promised hasn't really been achieved, except arguably strengthening the US border and the deportation of illegal immigrants. Other than that, everything else he's promised, the art of the deal and all that kind of stuff, is not working. And Russia, actually, again, I'm not sure if you saw the coverage, but Vladimir Putin has changed his attitude very much to the United States, and has had a couple of digs at Trump in the last few days. So things just aren't all rosy in the Rose Garden. Right, let's talk Lyme disease, because there's a lot of people have Lyme disease. I don't have an exact figure on it, but there's a lot of people around this county that have it. And for years, really, they've been disbelieved or have struggled to get diagnosis or been told it's in their head. And I think that really is all... I think that really is all added to a situation whereby it's not talked about as much as it possibly could be. And we do know what the risk factors are. Amongst them are ticks, and there are others, but a lot of the people that end up with Lyme disease, it starts off as a tick bite. And if you don't sort of have the knowledge, or if you don't get early access to antibiotics, it can have a devastating impact in the short term, the medium term, and indeed the long term. So it's really just something we should all be aware of. And all it is really is double checking yourself after you've got after you've been out through grass, check your kids, all that kind of stuff. We'll get through some of the telltales, but I want to bring Terry Burton onto the show either, because it's a timely reminder as we get out and about and into our beautiful outdoors. Terry, good morning to you. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. So what's your story, Terry?
I'm a photographer, and I was up in Gwydir, Dunfanaghy and Creesla doing the shoot. We were in fields, and I got bitten by a tick.
Did you know you got bit in the moment, Terry?
No. Okay. No. I've been bitten by ticks a few times because I'm often in a field. Mm. And, this time I didn't notice either, and I had long trousers on. They were with a cuff, so it was... unlikely that one would get into my trousers, but it did. There was a mild itch the next day, and that's when I found it.
And it was still attached to you?
Yeah, it was, yeah. So I took it off and put some steroid cream on it and kept an eye on it. But I knew very quickly that this was different to the other ticks that I'd had. There was different symptoms.
Yeah, go on, talk to me about that, because I think that's important.
Okay, well, it progressed pretty quickly. So I got bitten on Thursday, pulled it off on the Friday. So it was within 24 hours, which is good, apparently. And then on Saturday, there was a maybe 7 or 8 centimetre in diameter red, itchy circle around the bite. There was no bullseye ring. But I kept an eye on it, and I pressed down on it, and I could see that there was one forming. So I was able to be attended by Dr. Farah Maidin, and she immediately prescribed a very, very strong dose of doxycycline. They're actually evil, by the way. Really, really horrible antibiotics. But, yeah. So we got it within 36 hours anyway and got it treated, so... but I had the stiff neck. I felt slightly nauseous, and energy was very low. But you know, when you get to a certain age, you have those things daily anyway. So there weren't clear, unique symptoms. They could have been. There's lots of things could have caused those symptoms. But it was the bullseye ring. That was the thing that was it was very clear.
And you had no issue in terms of this being recognised as Lyme disease and getting the appropriate antibiotics.
No, because Farah Maidin, actually, she's quite an outdoorsy doctor, and she would have come across it, and there was no grey area in her mind what it was. And also, it's one of those things you can't test, especially not within the first week. You can't test the person to see is it Lyme. And even long term, you read stories about people having it for 10 years and still not getting an accurate test. So there's something wrong with the testing.
Well, it's the problem is it has been a historical attitude towards Lyme disease where people present and if they've missed the bullseye or they've gone through, you know, they're further down the road, it's put down as absolutely everything seemingly before it's Lyme disease. And we've people paying €600, €700, €800, €900 of their own money to get tests sent to Germany to try and ascertain it. And if it wasn't for consultant Lambert down in Dublin, people couldn't get prescribed the proper antibiotics even to sort of try and manage it once it's taken hold. If it wasn't for him, God knows how bad the situation might be for so many. And were you familiar with how Lyme disease can progress, Terry, and how impactful it can be on people's lives and organs and energy and everything else?
Yeah, because I know from social media, like the Bella Hadid and her mum both were quite public about the fact they had Lyme disease, so I'd heard about it from that. I just noticed that there were different symptoms this time. Like I've had tics before, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't worried, didn't get any treatment. I was just lucky. I was just lucky. That's all. I think you have to err on the side of caution. Like, the idea of having Lyme disease is terrifying to me. The idea of not having mobility and freedom, or maybe getting arthritis or any of the other things, or losing your eyesight is one of the indicators, which would be a bit of a problem as a photographer.
Yeah, of course it would. Now, what happens is when you, and I'm demonstrating an image here, that when you sort of look at, post-tick bite for Lyme disease, you know, you get the typical, right? It's a very, very clear center bull and then the outer ring, right? So that bullseye marking. Are you saying that wasn't necessarily immediately evident in you? If you hadn't maybe scrutinized this a little bit more, could you have just put that down to sort of a local reaction and nothing to it? Because often it's not as clear as even the NHS or the HSC might suggest it is with their pictures.
Although if you dig about in the information that's out there, you can see that the bullseye isn't like a finite proof. I always go on symptoms. And I just knew straight away that this was a different reaction to ones that I'd had previously. You can't take a risk with your health.
Yeah.
It's better to be on the side of caution.
Are there enough signs out and about? Because, there have been campaigns for ages to try and get signs out and about. I think there are some in certain areas. Can you recall if you encountered a tick warning sign, or were you too focused maybe on the photography and what have you?
No. Listen, I notice absolutely everything. I'm like constantly hypervigilant about the most random details. No, there were no signs whatsoever. And actually, I only know one other person that's been bitten by a tick.
Wow, okay.
I was speaking to a man as well locally, because he saw me. The antibiotics that I've been on gave me extreme sun sensitivity, so my hands have been on fire with this weather. Wow. Like I couldn't go outside. So this man saw me sitting putting aloe vera on outside Super Value, and I told him what was up, and he had a very strong reaction. He was angry. Actually said that I couldn't go saying it was Lyme disease. I don't know exactly why it was his business or why it bothered him at all, but yeah, I'm surprised by that there was hostility about its existence.
Wow, that's just from a random member of the public.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know the guy and he's nice, you know, but yeah, he had a very strong reaction to it. So, but I don't know, maybe he was hungry.
I think you're being generous, Terry, you rascal. Come here. What about going forward now? Because are you confident in that this tough round of antibiotics you're on now will make sure that this doesn't escalate within you? Because as you talked about testing there. So, is there something at the back or at the front of your mind, in fact? How will you know if... Because this can embed itself. We know that, right? And then symptoms can appear later down the line. Not wishing to alarm anyone, but what's the advice? Medical advice?
My understanding is you just have to keep an eye on the symptoms. And because they're so general, it could be anything. Like, I have a stiff neck for many reasons. So I'm just going to have to keep an eye on it. Now, I think as well with all these things, using your gut is not a bad idea. If your instinct is saying that there's something else, go and get it treated. Don't go against it. But yeah, I mean, as far as I understand, because you can get sepsis from it, and I've had that before, and that was awful. Mm. So that was my main concern, really. Mm-hmm. So that's why I took the tablets. That, I think it did do the job. Looking at the bite now, it's still bruised. It's still, you can still see the bite in the middle, and that's over a week ago.
Wow.
But as long as it doesn't travel to your lymph nodes, you know,
that's when it can travel around your body, isn't it? Okay, so what is your advice from your experience? Is it get to the GP straight away and advocate? Because as you've learned from your conversation, although not with a medical professional, attitudes to Lyme disease can sort of vary. So do you think it's important to, you seem to have hit on a GP that gets it, right? And I'm not saying others don't, but do you think it's important, Terry, that people say, no, I've got these symptoms, I got bit by a tick, I really need to get down potentially this course of treatment?
Yeah, listen, I would probably go in and say that to the GP. You know, like, GPs are humans as well, you know, and they could be overworked and they could be having problems at home. They may not be fully focused on the issue. I would say, I mean, I don't understand why there would be any contention if you go in and say, I was bitten by a tick and now I've got this big mark and I've got a sore neck. And I don't see how anybody could say that it was anything other than, a Lyme carrying tick.
Mm.
Now, I don't even know if I can say that I don't know if I have Lyme. I also don't know if the tick had it, but all I know is I had some symptoms that were frightening. And there was a potential for catastrophe, and I'm not taking the risk.
100%, and you have to trust your GP. Your GP is not going to throw those antibiotics out for the sake of it. They obviously, were of the view that this is, and I think precautionary, because obviously we know that it's very possible to get Lyme disease from a tick bite, right? So the idea being is that you do everything to prevent it happening.
Yeah.
All right, Terry, listen, I hope you're doing better soon. I think you're doing okay now, but you know what I mean. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Right, now we're joined on the programme by Damien Tansey, senior partner with Damien Tansey Solicitors. And after we came off air, on Friday, and we were actually discussing the Creusa tragedy on Friday, as we do regularly, we learned that Ombud Pleanála had overturned a Donegal County Council decision to grant planning permission for the redevelopment of the site of the Creusa tragedy. It's only just over 2 years, really. It's really recent history that this tragedy occurred, and people still very much trying to process it and move forward with their lives. It's hard to believe sometimes that we're talking about this so soon after the tragedy, but here we are. Damien Tansey, good morning. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. What's the reaction from the families to this news?
Well, as you know, Donegal County Council granted permission to redevelop the site last February. And on behalf of the numerous clients that we represent in the context of this tragedy, we filed two detailed submissions by way of appeals with a view to having the grant struck down or nullified. And you can imagine the relief that the families feel on hearing that Ombud Pleanála sided with them and upheld the appeals lodged on their behalf. You know, as the families see it, to rebuild on the same plot where 10 cherished family members lost their lives, they see that as insulting and disrespectful to the families and the victims of the tragedy. You know, 10 people lost their lives and numerous others suffered catastrophic and life-changing injuries. And the decision of An Bord Pleanála was revealing, and it was in a number of respects, primarily two. There were two planks to the decision. The first the first basis for their decision, or the first plank of their decision, was that the development, the proposed development in terms of its concept, in terms of its design, in terms of its mass, in terms of its bulk, was industrial looking and was completely out of character, and would be completely out of character with the streetscape and the character that is Preslav. That was the first plank. And the second one, and this is particularly of interest to our clients, the memorial that was included as part of the development, our clients saw that as being nothing other than tokenism. And it comprised of 10 steel rods. And they saw that as being incredibly insensitive, cruel, callous, and cold, and tactless. And Donegal County Council, in their wisdom, granted permission, despite the memorial being of that character.
And despite, can you clarify something for me as well, Damien? Did the council make... Or someone within the council make a representation to the planning authority, Commission Pleanála, to uphold the council's decision? And if so, is that ordinary?
Well, that's not the way things work. They actually granted permission, so there is an existing permission, and until that's undone, as it were, until that's nullified, it remains a grant of planning permission. So it's up to objectors or people who have a concern about the development to file appeals in relation to same. And that's what we did. That's the way the process is structured. But Donegal County Council did not engage whatsoever with our clients by way of ascertaining from them their views about the about a memorial and the format that it should take and the location for it and so on. And as far as we're aware, Donegal County Council also never consulted or discussed the planning application with the entities, the state entities that are engaged in investigations and which are still ongoing. Mm-hmm. You know, the Gardaí are still investigating the matter with a view to determining whether a crime was committed. The HSA, the Health and Safety Authority, is conducting an investigation on the basis that this was a workplace. And the Commission for the Regulation of Utilities is conducting an investigation on the basis that there was, you know, volatile, dangerous substances on the site, including petrol and gas and diesel. And the indications are that the explosion was caused by some mishap in relation to the gas installation or the manner in which it was being used. Now, that's all speculation. And, you know, our clients are dealing with a vacuum of information 2.5 years after this tragedy. This was a mass tragedy by any measure. And they still don't know what happened. They still don't know why, on a Friday afternoon, when their loved ones were either at work or went into the petrol station to buy some provisions or to pay for petrol, they suddenly died. And, you know, 2.5 years later, you know, it is high time that this state, Ireland, determined that some forum or some type of investigation, like, for example, a statutory inquiry, is set up with a view to producing answers. The statutory inquiry that our clients have in mind, and we made representations to the government in this regard last October when we met them in government buildings, is an inquiry that would be presided over, say, by a sitting judge or say a recently retired High Court judge who would have the authority and the power to summon witnesses, to take evidence under oath, and to make findings at the end of the inquiry with a view to explaining what happened and how this tragedy occurred.
Mm-hmm.
It's the minimum these people
You're satisfied that those things can all happen at the same time? I think Micheál Martin hasn't ruled out such an inquiry, but my recollection of his comments seemed to be that he would prefer the other processes to come to their conclusion before going down that road.
Well, how long is it going to take, Greg? How long is it going to take? You know, the right to a private life in this country is so fundamental as to be a constitutional right. And that right includes the right to grieve and includes an entitlement on the part of the families of loved ones who lost their lives to be afforded, you know, the space and the time to grieve for their loved ones. And this is a recognised right under Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights. And in terms, again, if I might refer back to the memorial, you know, when you think about other mass tragedies in this country, for example, Stardust, Oma, in New York, Ground Zero, in Wales, Aberfan, in England recently, Grenfell, in each of those, in relation to each of those tragedies, the memorial erected on the sites stands as a solemn reminder of loss and as a commitment to never forget. Now, you know, the people in Greece are entitled to no more and no less than that. But that is the minimum they require.
Just in relation to the planning decision, and we can only take it as published, The Ombud Planála, and to some extent, I suppose, Donegal County Council can only consider planning matters, not feelings or emotions, or maybe not. I'm interested in your views in relation to that. But I think, and I'm not sure if it was just done in, or if they were making a comment, but I think they did reference to the additional traffic of people wishing to visit the site, those who wanted to pay respects or were mourning those that they lost. So whilst they could only consider planning matters, it did feel to me that they did try to recognise the memorial element to it. Do you get where I'm coming from, Damien, and how do you read that?
There was, in the judgment of Ombud Planála, which was remarkably brief by normal standards, very often, excuse me, when a decision is granted by Ombud Planála, it's quite a lengthy decision where the reasons for the decision are canvassed at great length. This was remarkably short by normal standards. And as I said earlier in the interview, there was the issue about the unsuitability of what was envisaged in this project in terms of its mass and its style and industrial character, when compared with, say, the character and the streetscape and so on of Chrysler. Mm. And it also referred to the memorial. But in relation to the memorial, surely, at the very least and at the very minimum, the people who lost loved ones and the injured, the people who suffered catastrophic injuries, are entitled to be consulted about the nature of the memorial, where it's to be located, whether it should be located on the site, whether it should be part of the development that might ultimately happen on this site. There's nothing to prevent the owners or the developers formulating and preparing a totally new application. And if that happens, I trust and expect that lessons will have been learned as a consequence of the recent experience, and that there will be a full and comprehensive consultation with the interested parties.
I think, too, given the nature of that little patch of grass beside where bikes are being parked and what have you, is to if there were any future plans is trying to rebalance it, you know, the commercial wants and maybe the needs of the community, but also recognizing what happened there. And I think too, Damien, and I'm not sure if
Safety issues. Yep. Greg, safety issues.
Yep,
there was an explosion on this site on the basis of, in a sense, the mismanagement of volatile, dangerous materials. I mean, that's what it looks like.
Understood. But Damien, and also too, I think what we need to is, and I'm not sure if this can be done officially or whatever, is how victims of these tragedies are interacted with, be it local authorities. I think the Gardaí, they're satisfied enough in that regard. But in terms of how people are notified of certain processes, be it an application, be it a decision, you know, a lot of this information was being found out by the press and what have you. I think the country needs to learn how to deal with the victims of a tragedy like this, because the way it is at the moment, we as a state are compounding people's heartbreak and tragedy and trauma, you know, rather than sort of dealing with them sympathetically. Everyone's moved on, the families haven't, and I think the system needs to be looked at in that regard. They should be front and centre of all of this in terms of when, you know, when people are notified, not by a letter that comes a day after a newspaper article stating what's in the letter, or a report on the radio or what have you. You know, we need to learn how to deal respectfully with victims and surviving members of family around these tragedies, I think.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, and the processes involved in planning, for example, and in rebuilding on a site where there was a mass tragedy, by definition, involved an absolute need, a profound need, to consult with and engage with the people who have the most profound interest in this. And they are the people who lost loved ones and so on. And there is no movement on in relation to their lives. They don't move on, because what's happening or what's not happening by way of revelations as to the cause is in the nature of a stop or a bar on those people being able to, as it were, get on with their lives.
Okay, Damien, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Damien Tansey there, senior partner with Damien Tansey Solicitors, who represent many of those who have been so heavily impacted by that awful tragedy which occurred just 2.5 years ago. A caller says, morning, Greg, our government... Oh, I read that, didn't I? Fergal Geehan from County Roscommon cycled from Ireland to Australia over a 14-month period recently. He said his favourite people he met along the way were the Iranians. Prayers are needed by one and all that this war doesn't escalate to World War III. I wish they would say 31 died in the Omagh bombing. Avril Monaghan was 7 months pregnant when she was killed, making her unborn twins viable, which makes the figure 31, not 29. I understand. I'm not sure how that terminology was arrived at. You would be very familiar with it being, you know, 29 people died plus, including a woman pregnant with unborn twins. It's just seems to be the way everyone phrases. I'm not sure if that's done in association with the families, because you'd have to be most sensitive to her surviving family, if that makes sense. I've always wondered that myself. I was at the game yesterday in McCool Park and bought tickets for the halftime draw. Couldn't hear the numbers called out, as the PA system, in my opinion, is, and they don't cut corners here, crap. A big congratulations to Donegal. Very well done. As always, Sean Patton had a fantastic game. Well done to all the other players as well. Delighted for them, of course. The one and only Jim McGuinness. What a manager, says Mary. Brendan Devaney is going to be joining me after 11, so if you have any comments on the game, get in touch. The rally weekend, all in all, was a success, but more is needed for the upkeep of the streets. There's a footpath across from the Church of the Irish Martyrs. You can't walk in the footpath due to briars and nettles. It is a disgrace. The council needs to sort it out. Buncrana looks beautiful and was so proud after winning Best Kept Large Town in the national competition. Congratulations to our lovely town gardener and his team who do tremendous work, and our local Tidy Towns volunteers who work so hard. Thank you, everyone. And I've no reason to say this other than it's the truth. There are a few towns in Donegal, and I think they're all very well kept, don't get me wrong, but there are a few towns in Donegal that as you drive in, it just does hit you as how beautiful and well kept it is. And Buncrana is always one of those for me. So well done to everyone. I've got so much respect for the Tidy Towns people. You know, on the way to work, you see them out and about. And I've said this before, but blooming hell, I'm going to say it again. They're out and about and they make places that looked like a tip an hour ago look beautiful. They're out doing it for the love of their community, and they are fantastic. The weeds on the centre reservation along the new four lanes are at least 3 foot tall. Why plant there in the first place if they weren't committed to keeping it up? Well, I'm not saying I'm a great predictor of the future, but I couldn't understand why you'd put anything in there that needs maintenance. And I said that, be it trees, hedges, soil that might weed, anything at all, because it just compounds the... You either don't look after it or you reduce everything to one lane while you do look after it. So I don't know why that was done. I suppose it's on a piece of paper, it looks nice and pretty. But anyway, once again, we're deprived of watching the Donegal match. Why do we pay our TV license? The GEA shouldn't be about profit. It's interesting. GEA Plus had the games. The games may not have been shown otherwise. And you wonder why 400,000 people have a dodgy box in this country. A lot of people using them, I'd imagine, over the weekend.